This one for the homemakers. Hey, this one for the homemakers. Hey, hey, dance if you a homemaker. Hey, hey, this one for the homemakers. Hey y'all, welcome to Patriarchy Country, where we are throwing back the curtain on what life is like when you're a member of the Patriarchal Wives Club. We promote a biblical patriarchy here. So this is a patriarchy country where the sandwiches are always made and the women are allowed to have opinions. I'm Patriarchy Hannah, and I'm joined today by my friend, the beautiful, the wonderful, the intelligent, Anna Perez. And this is an episode we're going to talk about singleness. We're going to talk about singleness in the church. We're going to recognize our single sisters and how important you are to the body of Christ, and talk about maybe some of the things that you are facing that perhaps doesn't get addressed enough. I'm going to go ahead and open us, as always, with a couple verses. So this is going to be Ecclesiastes 3, 1 through 8. For everything, there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to seek and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to cast away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to silence and a time to speak. Oh, it's a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. So Anna, welcome. Thank you so much for doing this. I just want you to know you are so far like 100% my biggest guest.
Oh, so. Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored. I'm honored to be here.
You are definitely like the most famous person who cares at all to come on here.
So. Well, you know, I think we've had a lot of really good conversations on Twitter spaces, so I'm actually really excited. This is a topic that I'm really passionate about. So anytime, if you like what I have to say.
I almost always love what you have to say. I really have enjoyed getting to know you quite a bit in Twitter spaces. It has been an interesting experience, spaces in general. So anyone who doesn't know, Anna and I met in some of my the political spaces I go into, and she is a big deal. You guys may not know who she is, but she is a big deal. And it's been very interesting to hear, you know, kind of some of the conversations between the political people, and especially in like the kind of space circle that we've developed. Like there's the religious people and then there's the non-religious people. And there's so much overlap there because we're all conservative, but then also sometimes like the arguments, like the yoga argument and stuff like that, I don't know, sometimes it's just like shockingly clear that we're coming from two totally different places.
Yeah, it really is. And I think probably, and I don't mean to start it off on like sort of a more sad note, but I think the sad part about some of the things that like I hear when I'm in these spaces from the especially the men who are not particularly Christian, a lot of them are self-proclaimed atheists, they'll say, it's just that the thing is, whenever I've met people of faith or like particularly Christians, especially women, they're not actually Christian. They're not actually practicing what they preach or what they claim to believe in. And I find that that's so sad that that's been such a factor in their disbelief that either Christians really exist or that Christianity, like that you should be a true believer. Like it's just, it's sad to me that that's their experience, because that shouldn't be the case. And I think as Christians, that's an indication that we should be doing a better job. I think to just, you know, bear witness and to be, you know, true believers, actually act these things out in our lives. And to hear it from young men, it's even more disheartening, because they'll say things like, well, you know, it's just that I've never met women who actually behave in a Christian way. And it's like, well, that's not a good thing to hear. So that to me is like a little bit discouraging, but I mean, I think there's a lot that the Christian church does wrong in that aspect of leading men astray as well. But yeah, I think that's probably the most interesting part is the fact that they haven't really met women who really embody that.
It is sad, but I also think it is true. And I think of, you know, most conservative politicians claim, you know, to be Christian. And but then when you look at some of the things they do or say or the policies they support, it's like, I don't know, when was the last time you went to church? Like, are you really a Christian or are you like, you know, a cultural Christian? And so it's not surprising necessarily to me that, you know, people feel this way, but I agree with you that it's so sad. And I do feel like it has been a blessing that I was able to like ride some coattails into this little group, you know, because it's like maybe between you and I, we can show them that like real Christians do exist, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it shouldn't be that way, but you're absolutely right. Like the truth of the matter is that's on us as Christians. That's something that we haven't been doing a great job of. Clearly, if the takeaway for a lot of people who are atheists is, well, I'm just going to be more of an atheist now because I just haven't met real Christians.
Yeah. I think between you, me, and Caroline, maybe we can, like I said, you show them that, you know, there are people who truly strive to live by, you know, what we claim to. Mm-hmm. But it is definitely like an indictment on the church that these, you know, these are people who know a lot of people who claim to be Christian, I'm sure. There's no way they don't if they're involved in conservative politics. And so, you know, I don't know. It is sad. It's totally sad. Way to make it depressing.
No, but I think it's an important issue to, you know, diagnose because again, I don't want to get political necessarily about it, but
no,
it's like
fine.
The women that they're surrounded by, like, you know, who I'm talking about, a lot of these e-girls that claim to be Christian. It's like, what is the conservative movement if not Christian? Like, it's supposed to be Christian. You can't really have conservatism without Christianity, in my opinion. And I think that's not just my opinion, but other people as well. Like, and it just, it's sad to me how we've lost that because it means we've lost that in our country, which obviously explains the fall of the West entirely. Like, there used to be a time when it wasn't even just that. I mean, obviously, I think there's a lot of people who still agree on the moral standard of Christianity, but there used to be a time when, you know, we had an awakening, I believe two great awakenings. And I think to be more positive about it, I think you were talking before we started, you were saying like that you've noticed a lot of Gen Zers sort of stand up and want to become Christian themselves. And I think that's the positive outcome. That's the silver lining here is you see people who are young people who are actually upset at the lack of faith and they are making a change. So I think we are seeing a counterculture movement. And I think that's good. That brings promise as well.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of younger people. So just for anyone listening, Anna is 26. And single gentlemen. So if you are a firm believer and want to send me an application, she is quite attractive. So just throwing that out there. But, you know, Caroline and I can like run interference with you for that. But you know, I have a lot of, you know, young people who kind of, I don't want to say flock to me, but it's like we just kind of hit it off, even though they're young. And I have kids their age. Our oldest is 25. And so, you know, because Tony had a child when he was in high school. But we don't have a ton in common, not you and I, but like, you know, some of these people, just because we're in different places in life. But it seems like part of what has, drawn them to me, or part of why we get along and can have good, like, you know, conversations in DMs or whatever about things is because they are seeking real, not just religion, but like real Christianity, authenticity with that. They are seeking people in their lives who truly strive to live by the book, you know? And it has been actually super encouraging to me. We talk a lot about Gen Z and how crazy liberal they are, but I have been super encouraged by how conservative so many of the conservative Gen Zers are, because sometimes some of them say things that I'm like, okay, that might be too much, you know, not anything too crazy, but you know, just, it's like, all right, well, that's kind of like a lot. Maybe I don't generally feel like a liberal, but sometimes.
No, I know what you mean. But I think it's like an overcompensation because of the degeneracy that we're facing. I heard a statistic, and I repeat this all the time on my podcast, but the irony is I've never actually seen the statistic myself. I've just heard it from several other people. But I've heard that this group of conservatives in, so you're right, the Gen Z movement is still very, very liberal, but the group that is conservative, that's part of Gen Z, is more conservative, more Christian in particular, more specifically, than other generations. So I think what's happened is they've just seen this onslaught of degeneracy, and they've seen the sort of slippery slope come true, I think largely ever since the whole gay marriage decision in 2014, 2015. And they saw what happened as a result of that. Like, this is a slippery slope. Now you see naked men dancing in the streets and, you know, people talking about like transgenderism more normal than ever before. Rachel Randy Levine was just grooming a little boy on camera, talking about how transgender, you know, gender affirming quote care is so necessary for mental health. Well, what does that tell you? Well, it tells us that we've completely gone, you know, over the edge when it comes to this stuff. And so it requires a response that may seem a little bit extreme. And I agree. Like, I hear some of them and I'm like, well, maybe not. Like, even myself as a younger millennial. But then I also think about it and I'm like, no, I understand completely where you're coming from. Like, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures. And, you know, there's a season for everything. The Bible verse you quoted earlier, and that's absolutely true. And I think, you know, sometimes it's easy to look at that and be like, well, that's extreme. But I also, to a degree, understand that response, you know?
Yeah, I definitely get the response. And I don't necessarily, I will say, even sometimes when I'm like, oh, wow, like that was intense, what they just said, I don't necessarily disagree. One of the things that's so encouraging to me is that sometimes y'all challenge me that, like, because we've all, you know, I've got 10 years on you. So like, we've all picked up a little bit of, you know, I always joke about internalized feminism, but we've all got a little internalized wokeism too, because it's been drilled into us for much longer than we've been aware of the problem. And so sometimes when I have discussions with you or Samira or Luca or, you know, Freddie, you guys will say something that at first, you know, first hearing it, I'm like, oh, that's a lot. And then once it sinks in, I'm like, okay, no, actually they are right. They actually are right. And I have, like, I've seeded that ground and that's wrong. And that's, you know, I don't run in many circles where I'm, you know, the less, the more liberal person, but to have that, for it to be a younger person, that's kind of, you know, reminding me that, like, no, this is actually like what the standard needs to be. And that's actually what we need to hold people to. I don't know. I just find it very refreshing and really interesting.
Yeah, definitely makes you feel less alone, I think, as a Christian, and as a Christian who's really trying to live their life out, practice, you know, what they preach. And I think that I also think too, we do have to be careful, because we also want to make sure that we're not, you know, I don't want somebody to ever run into a situation where it's like, and we talked about this the other day, and Luca's very strong on this idea of, like, Luca, for everyone who, you know, doesn't obviously join us in the spaces, he's one of the people who joins us, and we talk a lot about faith and different denominations. And we had a discussion the other day, and he was saying, you know, we have to be careful that we don't present ourselves as, like, you know, this welcoming to everyone, everything, and we don't focus on sin and that element of the gospel as well, and how it's so important that we are balanced as Christians, and we make sure that we explain that there is such thing as sin, and we can't just be welcoming to everyone and everything. And I get that, and I'm all in for that as well. But we also have to present ourselves as welcoming and wanting to actually welcome, you know, new believers. We don't want to be the type of people who are also only one way or the other. Well, this is sin and this is wrong and this is wrong. We also want to, you know, we want people to know how joyful it is to be Christian as well, how freeing it is. And I think that requires a delicate balance. So yeah, like I agree 100%. Like, you know, I think we're kind of on the same page here. I definitely am not as extreme as Luca is per se with some of the things he says. I say extreme, meaning like, you know, he says things and I'm sort of like, well, I don't know if I necessarily would have that interpretation, but like, I definitely think that it's important to have a strong stance, especially right now. And it's important to not cede, as you said, like, I agree. We all to some degree have some sort of internalized wokeism, because let's be real. We all to some degree have to exist in the secular world. It's just, that's how it is. But as Christians, obviously we're, you know, as believers, we have to act in accordance to the Bible, God's standard rather than the secular world standard. So as long as we're implementing that in our lives and we understand that that should be our standard, like it's okay to exist in the secular world, but we have to constantly remind ourselves of what our standard is with that caveat of like, okay, but we also have to, you know, be welcoming to believers as well. We can't just be like constantly like, you know, only like Leviticus 100% of the time. You know, that's not the only book that exists. And I think that's important as well to know.
Yeah, no, for sure. That made me laugh. yeah, it's, yeah. And for the record, when we're saying like extreme, we're not talking about any kind of like alt-right type white supremacy stuff. That's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
We're just kind of talking about, you know, maybe some more morality laws and stuff like that. And I think it is a delicate balance in the sense of, you know, the standard doesn't change. Sin is sin no matter what. But also, everyone that you interact with is a fellow image bearer of God. And so we need to keep in mind that we need to treat them that way, no matter, you know, how, no matter how it is that they're conducting their life, if they're gay or, you know, we can say, hey, this is sin, but also not, you know, call them the F word and, you know, say like, you know, ugly things to them, you know? And so it's, I totally get what you're saying with the delicate balance. And it probably is, you know, at 36, we've pretty much curated our social group to, you know, everyone that we socialize with on a regular basis lives pretty much like we do, or at least close to it. And I think when you're younger, it's a bit harder to make that happen. And so that probably is a balance that's a little difficult for you in particular to find of, you know, coexisting in the world, but not of the world.
Yeah. 100%. And I think that's kind of where the dating dynamic becomes very difficult, because like I live in Washington, D.C., which is obviously a very secular city, very liberal, very, you know, anything goes type of city. I'm very similar for people who live in New York and L.A. in that regard. And, you know, you meet Christians all the time, right? But Christians in name only, as I like to say, as we were talking about earlier, does it really mean anything? Well, chances are, no, it doesn't. And it's really difficult kind of like, especially as a woman, I think, because, you know, as a woman, like, you know, a man is always trying to sell himself to you when you're in the dating and in the courting process of like, oh, like I'm this, I'm that. And you have to really work hard to decipher, okay, is this person really who I think they are? Or, you know, what, like, you have to really pay attention to their actions as far as, are they actually a godly man? Or are they just saying this because, you know, they obviously have other reasons for wanting to pursue you. And it would be easier, I think, if we all grew up in Christian communities or predominantly Christian communities where that's just the norm and everybody lives out their faith. But it's much harder when you're in these more, you know, secular atmospheres where there's more diversity of thought and of, I don't want to say diversity, because honestly, there's not a lot of diversity of thought. It's really just liberals, just degenerate liberals, to be quite honest, in D.C., if I'm just going to say what it is, because that's the truth. But yeah, it makes it more difficult. And you can't make sure, you have to make sure that like, they joke around in DC. They say, well, you know, everybody has like rose colored lenses here about like they call it like a DC 10 versus like a, you know, an LA 5, like they'll compare that, right? When they're talking about attractiveness. But the same thing kind of goes for Christianity, if you will, because it's like, are they really Christian, or are you just like not used to meeting Christians in a city like DC? Like, you really have to pay attention to their actions. That is extremely, extremely important, because it can be really deceiving. And when you're so, you know, I don't want to say desperate, but when you're so wanting to meet other Christians, not even in just the dating world, but as friends, like when you're just trying to look for friends who are Christian, it's like just finding a normal person who doesn't identify as like eight different genders is like a challenge in and of itself, obviously being hyperbolic. But the point is, like, you have to make sure you keep your standards high as a Christian. You keep your standard for what a godly person looks like still high, especially in the dating world when you're looking for like a man to marry. So yeah, that definitely makes it difficult. And, you know, a lot of people are, you know, they have one foot in, one foot out, so to speak, in the secular world and the Christian world. And it's just like, you have to really comb through the degeneracy in order to get to the real believers who you can actually see yourself spending your life with. Like, that has been a challenge, I think, not just for myself, but for a lot of Christians.
Yeah, I hear about it a lot, both the socialization aspect of it and the dating aspect of it. And we were kind of talking before I started recording that one of the things that young women ask me about a lot is, you know, like, what's your advice for, you know, single sisters? And it's, you know, I can give general kind of, you know, remember that your identity is in Christ, not whether or not you're married. You know, remember that you still are an important member of the body of Christ. You know, focus on what it is that you want in a husband and continuing to, you know, be in the word and learn more yourself so that you are just getting more and more prepared for when that man comes into your life, you know, when God brings him in. But in terms of really specific stuff, I was never a single young adult. I got engaged on my 18th birthday. And so I don't know exactly what it's like to, I don't know at all what it's like to be 26 and single, but I don't know what it's like to be 18 and single because I was engaged. And so that's, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on and kind of like talk about this is it is definitely a lot of the conversations that I see involving singleness in the church seem to be either steered by the egalitarian women. So women who don't believe in male headship, don't believe in patriarchy, you know, believe women can be pastors and all that kind of stuff. Or it's pushed by the kind of trad women who are oftentimes not actually Christian, that a lot of times they don't even claim to be Christian. They're just looking for like a traditional type relationship. And in both of those cases, you're not actually getting biblically sound discussion about singleness.
Yeah, that's such, you hit on a really crucial problem. And I'm really glad you brought this up because I wanted to sort of talk about that, like this whole like manosphere type of influence that's going on right now can be really confusing, because I think part of the problem, like you summed up there, is the fact that we just don't have a lot of great leadership for young women and young men who are single in the church. You know, it's like one extreme or the other. You have sort of like the more woke branch, the feminist Christians, I like to call them. You call them egalitarian. That's definitely true. They're not going to really, I think, lead you in the right direction to prepare you for a biblical marriage. And then you also have, but then you have this manosphere type of people, these people who like step in and they're like, well, we'll guide you. We're for the patriarchy. And it's like, neither of those are really good examples of what biblical patriarchies look like. And that's the problem, is there's really nobody who's leading that charge other than you, of course, Hannah, as far as, you know, giving people a good example or leading them in the right direction. And what happens when that's the case is you have two genders that truly don't understand each other, because what the manosphere does is they really don't, for the most part, and not all of them, but a lot for the most part, it attracts a lot of people that don't actually have a biblical background or backing, or they're not coming from a place of biblical truth. They just see like, oh, like finally somebody standing up for masculinity, which I totally get, because obviously we don't have a whole lot of people doing that in the secular world or in the Christian world either, to be quite frank. But like they cling to that movement. And the problem with that movement is it creates this like anger towards each each other, each gender. And you see this on things like the Whatever podcast. You see this on things like, you know, other podcasts I've seen, which I don't necessarily have a problem with. I think they get at a lot of truths. And I also find them quite entertaining a lot of the time. But I think the problem that I see there is they take away personal accountability for young men in particular. And once you take away personal accountability from young men, you see a loss of leadership in the church and even in the secular world as well. And what I mean by that is a lot of times you'll hear them talk about like, oh, they'll say things like, well, all women are hoes, all women will cheat on you. And I hear this from my male friends too, my more secular male friends. And I'll go to them and I'll say, okay, well, what exactly are you talking about here? Like who are these quote hoes that you're talking about? Who are you dating? And then they'll show me these women, their Instagram accounts, and they'll be like half naked. It'll be like a bikini picture every single post. And it's like, okay, but you have to take responsibility for surrounding yourself by these women. This does not speak for the majority of women. If you truly wanted to seek out a godly woman, you wouldn't be DMing these half-naked women on Instagram. So of course you're going to have this perception of women of, oh, they're all hoes. And, you know, as men, we get the short end of the stick because you're putting yourself in a position where these women are going to behave that way. They're going to cheat on you. They're going to choose, you know, wealth over the right man. They're going to do all of these things to you that, you know, you may not be okay with later on. And like, and then they'll be like, well, she had God first in her bio. I'm like, really? Seriously? Have you ever heard of the term actions speak louder than words? And it's so like sad to me, because then what happens is they get upset at women, right? This whole manosphere movement, they're angry at women because they've surrounded themselves by the wrong women. Then they wind up treating women badly. And then women walk away from that experience feeling a bit jaded. And then what happens is they wind up thinking, well, I don't really like men there's no good men out there. They're really terrible. Like, I'm just gonna, you know, date and maybe use men for their resources. And so you see this vicious cycle of just degeneracy of men and women not understanding that honestly, the big mess up was, hey, you didn't really start out in the best place to begin with. You didn't surround yourself by the best people to begin with. And so now all men think all women are hoes, and women think that all men are, you know,
trash.
Just terrible, terrible trash. Yeah. And it's funny because this whole manosphere movement that's, you know, the whole idea is traditionalism to create more trad people in general. Well, actually it creates more feminists, because the argument of that you're creating women to have, or you're influencing women to have, is, well, all men are trash. That's a feminist argument. That's not true. There are amazing biblical men out there. You're just, you know, unfortunately being influenced by the only quote traditional movement we have, because again, I think the Christian church has failed on this front. So sort of the secular traditional movement has taken its place. And that's the only leader we have right now, as far as traditionalists go. And it's an endless cycle of destruction, to be quite honest. And again, like, honestly, sometimes to your point, I don't see a lot of these trad women, like, you know, a lot of times Pearl Davis, I'm just using her as an example, but there are other women out there like that. Like, all they are is they're like the feminists of the manosphere. It's like, you're just making the same argument, but on the side of men. Like, this isn't helping anyone get anywhere as far as dating goes.
Yeah, I'm sure you've heard me in spaces kind of rail against the manosphere stuff, and also, you know, obviously the feminists. And so the reason that I'm sure you've heard the term like complementarian in the church, because generally the two paths of thinking about biblical gender roles for the last couple of decades has been that you're either complementarian or you're egalitarian. And why we very much distinguish ourselves and call ourselves patriarchal is because we acknowledge that there are biological differences between men and women, and that God created us different for different purposes. And we are different, I wouldn't say in every way, but to our core, because our purposes on this earth are very different. And this is shown throughout scripture. You know, in even Paul writes about, you know, how women are going to be saved through childbirth. And people think, you know, what does that mean? Well, in my mind, that means that women, we're going to mostly fulfill the Great Commission by by having children, by raising children, whether you adopt or you actually physically birth them yourselves, but also in mentoring, you know, younger people and bringing out that the motherly side of us, because that's what we were designed to do. So even if you don't actually have children, if you never get married, it is still very much possible. Proverbs speaks to this, or I'm sorry, it's Psalms 119:3, that, you know, the Lord will give a home to the barren woman and give her, you know, lots of children. And when I was going through like a lot of my fertility issues, I found a lot of comfort in that, just looking at the relationships that I was able to form with young people, that they came really easy to me because I have a kind of more motherly just instinct in me. That's just always been it. And I think part of the why it's so easy for me is that this is just something I've always been in touch with. And feminism tells women that that's a social design. And then the manosphere focuses on it way too much. So they hyper focus on, you know, the very different, you know, styles of men and women, in that causes them to kind of write women off as kind of brainless, you know, because we are a more maternal and geared by emotion. And then the feminists are like, no, we're totally the same, you know, the egals. And it's like, no, the we are different, but we're both valuable. And it's not, I don't want to say the answer is somewhere in the middle, but it's just both are wrong because both are just totally godless movements. And Pearl in particular, like, yeah, that's a lot. She is definitely like the female voice of the manosphere. Some of the things she says, it's like, I don't know, girl, if you really think these things about yourself, like you have terrible self-esteem and you probably need therapy. And you definitely need Jesus.
Yeah. And I also think on the Pearl topic, not to like rail against her per se, but like, you know, I prefer getting my advice from women who, you know, are successful in this arena, such as people like you, Hannah. And that's not to knock, you know, on women who are not like in relationships. I think you can understand something in theory and you can like sort of, you know, empathize with other people, kind of like what I'm doing now as a single woman. But like, Pearl gives this advice and women like her, like they give advice that it's like, but you yourself aren't particularly successful in this arena. And you're giving like this advice that I doubt you're implementing into your own life, you know? So it's like, I don't even think that they are necessarily practicing these things, but I think that's a really good point. How like one is like, they're too extreme, so to speak. Like, and I think it just leads people to not understanding anything. And I remember there's like that one conversation you had where you were like, yeah, ultimately my husband makes the decision, as the patriarch of our family, of course. But like he consults me, he lets me know like what his thought process is as his wife. Like that's obviously the more reasonable approach. I mean, let's be honest, in practice, even like, do you really think, Pearl, that a man would not consult his wife? You know, that's just not how people live.
Right. Well, and she seems to equate consult with ask for permission. And that's, my husband's never asked me for permission for anything in our entire marriage. You know, 17 years and he's never been like, hey, can I? In a way that's like, you know, seeking approval for his actions. But he values my input, my brain. And of course, he wants to consult me and think, just ask, what do you think about this? Like, what's your viewpoint on this? Or, you know, thoughts about this decision that I'm making? And it's so funny that I view feminists and the manosphere as essentially two sides of the same coin, but they're both so extreme to me. But somehow, like, I'm the extremist, which is, it really is laughable to me, honestly, like, because it's like, my position seems to be super reasonable here.
Yeah, like, it's funny you say that, because it kind of just like speaks to how like Satan is a deceiver, to be quite honest. Like, I know that sounds crazy too, but like, it's, well, I guess not, because I'm in a totally space true. Where people would understand me here. Yeah, like, I feel like, you know, sometimes like these manosphere conversations can sound like they're getting at truth. And like, there are some times they'll say things and I'm like, yeah, that's totally true. Like, you know, life is harder for men in these aspects or whatever it might be that they're getting at. But to your point, like then you say something and suddenly it's extreme, or I say something and because we're coming from a Christian perspective, a religious perspective, it's then extreme. And it's interesting because actually at the root of what we're saying, and not only is it backed by biblical truth, but it's also like far more reasonable, you know, to implement into your life than what they're saying. But the reason why society deems it to be extreme is because of that very reason. It is backed in biblical truth. And that's the way Satan deceives. So he uses these movements to replace or to attempt to replace the Christian movement. And honestly, as Christians, we have to put a stop to it. We have to not let that happen. And I think the solution here is we just need, you know, more leadership for single people in the church. I think you identified the problem immediately, which is the fact that we just simply don't have that. And we're just going to see these manosphere movements rise and get, quote, you know, and get more extreme, right? If we don't replace it with our own movement and make it so that that becomes what people seek out for advice. And I think we do have a lot of promising, there are a lot of like, we have a very promising future considering the fact that, as we were talking about earlier, like a lot of young people are striving to have a stronger faith. They're seeking religion. But again, of course, we have to make sure that that is the right religion, right? The true one, Christianity. And that's also a big part of it, because a lot of times, like, they'll claim to be religious. You see a lot of them claim to be Muslim now. I don't even necessarily think that they actually are Muslim. I think that it's kind of a LARP for them, if I'm being honest, because they don't live their lives out the way a Muslim would, a lot of these people. So they don't really change anything about their lives. They just say that they are. And if I were a Muslim, I don't think I'd be happy to see that. But even just as somebody who is a, you know, Christian, it's just like, I don't want religion to ever be just a trend for anyone, regardless of what religion you are, to be honest. But like, as a Christian specifically, I want to see the Christian movement have a stronger voice in when it comes to leading, you know, singles towards success. Cause I think that's how we can also, you know, create more believers that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that, so we have, you know, 11 sons. So we spend a lot of time talking about man things and, you know, how to be, you know, a strong man and biblical masculinity. And so there are podcasts out there. So there's like Eric Kahn, there's Brian Sauve, there's Michael Foster, these pastors who, you know, Michael Foster wrote a book called It's Good to Be a Man. And he had a podcast, you know, called the same thing. And now he has a new one with his wife called We Made People, I believe. You know, and then there's like Doug Wilson, and there's Doug Wilson's daughters who talk about the female side of things. But you've got these people popping up who are a lot of the, you know, the Brian Sauve, Eric Kahn, Michael Foster. It's, they talk about a lot of the stuff that the manosphere people talk about in terms of the problems that they identify. Because generally speaking, if you're talking about someone like Andrew Tate, if I sat down with Andrew Tate and I had a conversation, we would not agree at all about the solutions, most likely, to, in general, about the problems that society is facing today. But I would say we probably completely agree on what the problems are. And so they speak to, you know, these pastors, they recognize the problems that men are facing and they speak to it. And when I got on Twitter, and I literally never intended to be like the avatar face of, you know, being a patriarchal wife, like literally at all. That wasn't the point of my Twitter. But it just became obvious that there's not a lot of, there's a few women who talk about things, but some of them tend to be even, I would say, extreme. Even though they, you know, they claim to be coming from like a biblical background. But it's just something that's needed. Like one of my DMs showed me that people just want to know, like, what's your life like? Because they can't even understand it. And so just the general part of why I tweet the way I do is It's so, to me, it's like, I don't know why anyone cares about this. It's just like literally our life, but it's just the general day to day of what our house looks like, you know, of what running our household looks like and conversations between me and my husband and, you know, how we raise our kids and stuff like that. And people just, you know, especially young Christian women, I think they're looking around, a lot of them, and they're saying, I don't see any strong biblical men. Like, I don't know what a biblical wife, what is biblical femininity look like, you know? And we have to, I think we have to at both acknowledge that that includes being submissive to your husband, you know, falling under male headship and having a quiet and gentle spirit, but then also when needed, driving a tent stake through a man's head. So, because all of these things are biblical and we have to find that balance. Like, no one who knows me would call me like a wilting flower, but also, you know, I follow, you know, certain standards, which for the record, I'm certainly not perfect at it. And the gentle and quiet spirit thing will be something that I work on my entire life because it's not natural to me. But, you know, it's just, we just have to address both sides of it. You know, you don't have to be, you know, a meek church mouse to be a biblical woman, but you also do not need to be a loudmouthed woman. And the something in between is where it you can easily fall if you really understand scripture.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of it. I think it's we don't know what that looks like, what a biblical marriage looks like. We meaning I think the majority of not just the secular world, but also here in the Christian world, because, you know, people don't always talk about those things, but when we do talk about it, it's always with this sort of PC lens, this like very woke, well, you know, women, they have their places too. And it's like, yeah, but like, let's be honest, for like a very, for a successful relationship, someone needs to be leading the marriage. And from a biblical standard, that's the man. And we don't have a good insight into the everyday life, we meaning single people, of like what real Christian believers, how they live. And it's not like, you know, we don't have good examples of that. The only, and if you look at like the media, even like the only example we have of that is like the Duggar family. And they've been, of course, involved in their fair amount of scandals. And it's like, you know, we're lacking in a true representation of that, especially as new Christians. Like, I think there's a big difference between people who maybe grew up with that and had a great example. And, you know, you know, God bless them. That's amazing that they're able to come from that background. But the reality is most people don't have that. And so it's really important. And you know, I'm grateful for people like you, Hannah, who are talking about these topics. And yeah, I think this idea that it automatically means that you're going to be like a wallflower just because you're Christian or you're married as a Christian woman is not true at all. Like, we're supposed to be strong leaders for our children. How can we stand up to, you know, as a PTA mom, if that's the thing you want to do, like, how can you stand up to the PTA and stand for your kids or the school board? Cause you're supposed to protect your children. You know, obviously that as a man, as the sole provider for the family or the breadwinner for the family, that's on you as the mom. And, you know, it's important to have that strength and it's important to be able to defend your children when necessary, defend your family when necessary. But I'm with you on that. That's definitely going to be a struggle for me too, in my marriage, I'm sure, kind of creating that balance because obviously what I do for a living, I'm pretty outspoken. But it's something that I think we don't have much guidance on as it stands. And I think that in addition to men sort of standing up and being good leaders for men in the church, women need to be there as well. Women like you who need to be able to, you know, exemplify that, exemplify and not just exemplify it, but also like not put it on display per se, but have it be an open discussion. Like, this is what my life looks like on the day. Like, this is how I implement this in my life. Like, this is how our, that's so important for people to understand because realistically, you know, you can hear something, but then, you know, a lot of times it's just like a foreign concept until it actually, becomes the case. And I also think that, like, we don't focus a lot on what women need to do to prepare for marriage either. That's a big thing that I think is missing. And, like, we've, because of society, like, kind of downgrading femininity for so long, like, all of these, you know, life skills that are so important for when you do get married and have a family, like cooking, cleaning, people don't really know how to do those things anymore. And, like, it's so important that women, I think, in our 20s, because most of us, I think, you know, didn't get married as early as we would have liked, or maybe are single in our 20s now. Like, you know, those are important skills to work on in your season of singleness, because when you do meet the right person, when you are ready to get married, like, you don't want to be in this situation where you were ordering takeout every night when you were single, and then suddenly you find yourself married and you don't even know how to be a wife. Like, I think it's time that society puts that emphasis on how to be a feminine woman. Like, it used to be, you look at old 50s videos, you could find them on YouTube, they would actually explain how to be a good housewife. And nowadays that would be deemed as extremely sexist, even by the Christian church. But the reality is, those are actually pretty helpful life lessons. So I think it's important to also teach women how to be women. I think that's something that's missing.
Yeah. And I will take this opportunity to plug a podcast that I really enjoy called Bright Hearth, which is, you know, it's Brian and Lexi Save. So he's a pastor, she's his wife. They talk about a lot of marriage things, a lot of, you know, they have episodes about, you know, how to make big decisions without killing each other, how to navigate, you know, doctrinal change within your marriage. Because it, you know, as Christians, as we're continuously sanctified, you know, our religious convictions may change some. You know, there's definitely things that at one point in time, you know, Tony and I thought this, and then he came to a different conclusion. And, you know, navigating that, you know, for instance, when we first married, I didn't head cover, and now I do. And so, you know, kind of these kind of ins and outs of marriage, but, you know, also talking about, like you said, you know, like we've talked about, you know, preparing yourself in your singleness, and also, you know, how this is such a great time for you to be able to really plug into your local church, and not at the expense of yourself, of course. Just because you're single doesn't mean that the church can, like, use you as free labor for the daycare or whatever, but you do have more available time than, maybe not you particularly, because you have a pretty busy job, but, you know, single people in general, because you don't have a family. Caroline, one of the things that she said one time was that, you know, one of the ways that she volunteers at the church is, like, going on the youth retreats as, like, a chaperone for the younger girls, because that's something that's easier for her to do because she's single, as opposed to, I mean, I certainly could do it, but it's probably not something that I'm going to volunteer to do, at least not regularly for sure. But I don't know if I would do it at all, because leaving my family for a whole weekend, that's just a lot, you know? And so it's, there's just so much that, you know, single people, the church needs to be investing in them. And, but also, we've got to teach them how to, I think, invest in themselves to, you know, get to not just necessary, obviously getting married and having children should be the goal. That is what God calls most women to, but what you do in the meantime, that, I mean, that matters. Your life's not just on pause because you're not married and single. You are still part of the kingdom and vitally important. And so finding, you know, an older woman who, maybe like a much older woman who needs help reading her Bible and sitting with her and reading a couple times a week, or volunteering with the church nursery, or, you know, making a couple dishes for the church potluck because you don't have six kids running around screaming while you're, like, trying to do this. And just things like this, it all sounds so service oriented, but the fact is, that is all of our callings, is like to serve. And so it's, I don't know. Do you get what I'm saying? I've kind of gone
no,
off.
No, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think that that's something we forget as Christians in general, like that that is actually a big part of our calling for all of us. And whether you're a man or a woman, that's something we should be getting involved in when it comes to being single and having that extra time. And it kind of makes me think of how it's, I think specifically for women, it's a good idea because there's opportunities to be sort of the mother of your community, if you will, in the meantime, while you're not actually a real mother. It sort of gives you a sense of responsibility to like look after other people, especially when you're getting involved with like children. Like there's a daycare at my church as well. And like, that's a great opportunity to get involved. And it's like, when you said that, like, you know, I'm obviously busy with work, it's like that, that's actually like sadly true. And I just thought about that for a moment. And it's like, I also don't want to be one of those people that like gets so consumed with my work that it's almost like I'm losing that more maternal instinct to take care of my community as well. Cause I think that's a super, but important for both men and women to get involved in like acts of service, but particularly women to look after their community. I mean, if you look at even the trends throughout American history and Western history as a whole, you can see how the more we put women in the workforce, the more we've seen Western society sort of crumble because we've had less women available to be active in their communities. But in your season of singleness, you don't have kids. So even though you might have a job, obviously, I assume you do, you know, you have a little bit of extra time to be able to do that. And I think that's totally true. We don't need to wait until we're all, you know, stay at home moms or we're, you know, we have that part. Because actually, if anything, we're going to be more busy then. You know, being a mom is extremely, extremely time consuming job. So yeah, I think that's super important to remember. And it's just, it serves as a reminder for myself. You know, I also don't want to be so consumed by the secular world, which has these demands on me as I do work in a, you know, a normal like job or not. I'm not normal. I'm a host, but I travel quite a bit. I'm very invested in my job and I don't want sort of that masculine influence to overtake my ability to sort of become a member of my church, a member of my community in a way where I can serve people. And, you know, God also, he recognizes that and that, you know, will serve you well in life later on as well. So it's just like, it's hard. It's really hard to be reminded of that because in theory you can remember it, but then actually like taking those, making the time in your life to do that. And I think it's super important because one thing that I think happens to women is we're so used to like being in the workforce, especially if you've been single for a while and you're maybe in your 30s already and you're still single. It's like you get so used to just competing in the workforce. You kind of lose that almost like maternal instinct to want to get involved. And I think it's so important that we retain that. And the way you retain that is by getting involved in your church, is by getting involved in your community. I see so many young women lose that. And I think that actually kind of influences them to focus more on their job rather than finding the right man and having a family. They almost sort of like give up on that goal because they're so brainwashed by the life that they're already living. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's hard because it's like the secular world forces masculinity on women so much that it's very difficult to break away from that realistically. And we just have to make sure that we don't go too far down that path.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And so I've got a couple comments on what you just said. And before I make this next statement, just for the record, this is not a personal, like, this is not directed towards you, but one of my more controversial takes when people ask me, you know, what's your advice for young single women is choose a career with the, I understand that if you're 18, 19, 20, you're not married, that, you know, in an ideal world, you would still be at home. We plan on letting our daughters live at home until they get married and never forcing that. I'm not saying they can't work, but never forcing them to be in a position of having to pay their own bills or anything like that. But that's not the way that our society is generally set up right now. And so, and I think that is the ideal. And I think we need to go back to something like that, but that's not going to happen tomorrow. So I get that there's pressure to get a job. And also you may need to, not everyone's parents can afford to support them like that. And you want something to fill your time. You know, I don't think you just need to sit around twiddling your thumbs until, you know, a man comes along. So, but choose a career path, choose a job with the idea that marriage and children is the goal. And so maybe don't choose a career path that is going to be super time consuming, because as you stated, like, that makes it so easy to lose focus on the fact that marriage and children is the goal, because you're so wrapped up in this career. And I don't think it's wrong for women to have careers or anything like that. But I do think that choosing what you major to go, what you major in college carefully, and, or, you know, picking the jobs that you choose to take carefully, I do think that that is an area where a lot of single women actually hinder themselves. Now, I have a friend who's a photographer who's 30, you know, in her early 30s and still single. She's a wedding photographer. Well, that's certainly, I'm not saying it's not a demanding career per se, but it's not, that's certainly well within the kind of Proverbs 31 type job description. So it's not a definite, just because you don't choose this like high powered career thing, that you will find a husband easier. But I do think you are kind of hindering yourself when you choose to go into, like, if you choose to go to law school, that's, you are actually hindering yourself. I'm not saying it's wrong, but you do need to be realistic about the time investments and the financial investments too. If you have, you know, a bunch of student loans and you marry a man who potentially also has student loans, it may be really difficult for you guys to live on one income if you're having to make two sets of student loan payments, plus like a rent or a mortgage. And all of this may mean that you have to put off having children, which I think is like not ideal. And so, you know, I think these are all things to like kind of keep in mind. And I've said this before, and it makes people, you know, kind of upset when I say it, but it's not in any way meant as a condemnation of anyone. It's meant as, you know, advice for people who are in that spot now. If you've made the decisions you've made, that's done. So you've got to work with what you've got. But if you haven't made those decisions yet, that is something maybe that you want to keep in mind. And then Caroline and I have talked about, you know, Caroline's in her early 30s as well. She's single, and having to find the balance between, and I'm sure this is something that affects you too. Well, you just talked about it actually, so of course it does, but you're single, you pay your own bills, you live on your own. So you have to find that balance between, like you said, still embracing your femininity and not becoming hardened by the masculine energy that in some ways you kind of have to take on just to exist, you know, and needing to be independent. So let's talk about that a little bit. Like, what do you think are things that people can, like, that young women can like sort of proactively do to find that balance where it's like, I must be independent, but also I do want to be, I don't want to be a boss babe. You know, I just have to exist in the world, you know?
Yeah, no, I want to go ahead and say that was such a good piece of advice. I wish that more people would give that piece of advice and would speak that honestly with women. I think one of the main reasons why we are in the mess that we're in the Christian church, but also outside of that in the secular world, is like, we don't tell women the reality of their biological makeup. Like, we're just not real with them. Like, the reality is it's a lot different for men than it is for you. And it's by design, because men are meant to build up their career. They're supposed to be the providers. As a woman, it's far more important that you focus on finding a good mate that you're able to settle down with. I say mate, but like husband, obviously. And you're able to, you know, have a family with them, because obviously biologically you're, you know, hindered in that way if you wait too much longer. So I think that's really important. And this whole boss babe culture has screwed things up, because honestly, no one even told me, and this is that I grew up in a quote Catholic household. Now I'm no longer Catholic, I'm Christian. But point is, I grew up in that house in a very secular household that was called themselves Catholic. But the idea was, you know, you could do anything you want to do. You're just like a man. Like, no, I'm really not. And I think it is important to acknowledge those differences. And I think it's amazing what you're doing with your kids, and especially with your, you know, your daughters, not forcing them to move out or pay their own bills. Like, that's so crucial. And my parents didn't really force me out, but like, you're absolutely correct. Like, there are certain jobs where it's like, you shouldn't be pursuing them. And I actually, you know what I pursued for a living? I work from home, but it makes it, as far as answering your question there, like, what can women do? I think for me, what makes it personally easier is I work in the conservative sphere. So like, there are a lot of feminine women. They may not always be the best Christians, but There are a lot of women who do embrace their femininity. So I have the opportunity to like, I will say I'm very blessed. I get to work from home. I don't have to go to an office every day. So I'm sort of to some degree insulated from the daily 9-to-5 office setting. But, so it's a little bit easier for me than say like, you know, a high powered attorney that bought into some of the boss babe stuff. But even if you are someone who, you know, bought into that, it's, you know, unfortunate, but like, you're probably realizing now, like, okay, maybe I bought into something that I shouldn't have. But the, to your point, like, you got to work with what you have. I think probably the best thing to do is to just, you know, get involved with your community. And we kind of already said it, like, really stay in touch with people who are Christian, who are at your church, get involved with, you know, with kids, do things that like involve skills that you're going to want later on. For me, I cook a lot. Like, I like to expand my cooking skills. Like, that helps me feel more myself, more as a feminine woman. And I think it's really important that you never take a promotion at the expense of doing things that make you feel you as a feminine woman. Like, if you find yourself working crazy, crazy hours, is it really worth it for the extra money you're making if you want to get married anyway? Let's be real, you know? Is it really that necessary? Now, obviously you have to make a living if you're single. You need to be able to pay your bills, but don't see money as the sole way that you attain your value as a woman. I know there's a lot of talk of like, what's a high value man? What's a high value woman in society today? A lot of it has been led by the manosphere movement, but I actually think that that's an important conversation to have, because along with this whole misunderstanding of what it means to be a woman and what it means to be a man, we've also lost what it means to be a high value woman or what it means to be a high value man, meaning what society values women for. Well, obviously, we're going to be valued for things that aren't necessarily in the protector or provider aspect of things. So don't focus so much on getting that next promotion. Don't focus so much on constantly climbing that corporate ladder. Even if you work a high-powered corporate job, like, understand that your, you know, the way you present yourself, meaning to some degree your appearance, you know, your skill set, cooking and cleaning and incorporating those things into your life, that's what's going to make you a higher value woman, what you bring to the table as a feminine woman. And just bear that in mind, you know, if you're striving to constantly get promotion after promotion after promotion and climb that corporate ladder, at the end of the day, that's not going to be particularly impressive to a man who probably already has those goals for himself, a biblical man who's looking to settle down with a woman who will most likely be a homemaker, right? So I think it's important to just bear in mind, like, what makes you high value to a future spouse versus what you're trained to think makes you high value, because they're two different things. And we've completely lost that concept. And I think, like I said, that's something that the manosphere definitely gets right. And like, I think it's something that's so crucial that a lot of women are waking up to now, a lot of feminists are waking up to now, because they're saying they're going on these dates with men and they're going off about all of their accolades and, oh, I did this, I'm a lawyer for so-and-so, I did this, I'm, and the guy's sitting there looking at her like, what? Like, this is, I didn't come here for like a rundown of your LinkedIn profile. Like, I wanted to get to know a nice person that I could potentially see a future with. And, you know, it's really just important to, you know, obviously, okay, whatever, I get, you have to provide for yourself. I'm there. I believe in that. But also, it's important to not chase money, because again, it's not going to define you as a man either, to be quite frank. Like, that's not the most important thing either, but it is definitely higher on the list of things that, you know, make you more of a better mate in the marketplace, so to speak, because you are able to provide more for your family. That's so important, to be a provider for your family, biblically speaking. So yeah, that's a lot more important as a man than it is as a woman. That's not going to define your value really. So just to bear that in mind and focus on the things that make you feel feminine, and don't forego those things just in order to like attain a promotion, so to speak. Cause like, then if you're sitting there ordering takeout every night, like I said, and just, you know, living the life of a man, is that really going to get you where you want in life? And the answer is no. And most men will tell you that too, that that's not something that they're necessarily interested in seeking. And if they are, that's probably a red flag.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we really emphasize to our boys, and to our daughters to a degree, but they're, you know, my daughters are 9 and 11. So we kind of view parenting as, you know, there's different stages. When their kids are young, you're in the kind of hyper training stage. And then as they get older, they're still training, but you're the focus has shifted because you're training them, you know, to be, well, you're always training them to be adults, but you're shifting their focus to you're about to be an adult, you know? And so with the, we talk to our girls about it some, but it's so far just been mostly, you know, something we really emphasize with the boys is you need to make decisions now that are going to not necessarily lead you to the life that you want, but that are going to contribute to that goal. And that's kind of, you know, the mindset behind, you know, be careful when you're picking your career, your job, and things like that, is that if the life that you want is a husband and children, then like I said, being a lawyer is just probably not a path that makes sense for you for multiple reasons, even if you would be good at it. And I picked this example specifically because when I went to college, you know, I was raised by my older brother who is an atheist. And so but he's also like very anti-feminism. And so I was raised with this idea that, you know, kind of patriarchal in a sense, definitely an idea that there's men and women and that our roles in life in general are different, but also that if I wasn't going to get married young, you know, I got married at 19, that I needed to be able to provide for myself in a way that would not leave me dependent on, you know, a baby daddy to pay me child support, to be able to pay my bills and stuff. And so when I went to college and declared a major, I wanted to do education because my mindset at the time was, if I have to work, at least I'll have the same general schedule as my children. And so we'll have, you know, kind of the same days off and sort of the same, you know, basic schedule. And so that would work out better than, you know, if I was doing something else. And my brother's kind of condition for that was, that's fine, but if you are not married by the time you graduate, you know, by the time you're like a junior, then I want you to take the LSAT and go to law school. So like because he was paying for, most of my college was covered by like scholarships and stuff, but he was paying for the rest of it. And, you know, that was kind of the condition, was like, fine, you can major in education, but if that's not, you know, if it doesn't work out for you to get married young, then I want you, I really, because you would be a good lawyer. So it's like, I want you to do that. And I'm not saying that was right or wrong for him to like put that condition on there, but it makes sense to me that that's how he felt coming from like a more secular point of view. And so that's kind of why I use the lawyer in particular, was because that was actually something that was on my mind, even though, you know, I got engaged on my 18th birthday, but just always kind of something, it was a difference in choices that was, you know, pointed out to me very, you know, relatively early, you know, because I had talked about becoming a teacher for most of my life. And my brother's kind of thing was always like, okay, fine. Yeah, if you're not married, that's fine. If you're married, that's fine. But if you're not going to get married, you need to go into like a higher earning job. And so anyway, that's why I picked that example. And I've kind of gone all over the place here. But my point is just a really important focus is, you know, not fantasizing or hyper-focusing on what you want instead of what you have, but actively choosing to make decisions that are going to feed into the life that you hope to have and the goals that you're going to have. And I think that covers an array of topics that's going to, you know, with our kids, we talk about this with, it includes everything from like nutrition and physical exercise to the media that you consume. Like, is this helping or hindering your future goals? Because there is no neutrality. It's going to be one or the other, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's really like good advice, honestly, just for anyone. I think that like, we're so focused on making kids feel like, oh, you can do anything you want. You can do this. You could do that. Like the messaging is to empower them to a point where we're not being realistic with them. And I think that's really important. That's missed a lot in households. So like, just to say like, you know, oh, okay. Like, you want to do this. Okay, well, realistically, this is what your life is going to look like. And then you make the decision from there whether or not that's what you want your life to look like. But the reality is, like, let's say, even if you don't use the example of a lawyer, look at the example of a doctor. You're going to be working for X amount of years. You're going to be in school for X amount of years where, you know, doctors work crazy schedules. They work really, really hard to achieve their goals. And, you know, thank goodness we have them. But like, you have to accept that if that's a goal of yours, you're probably not going to be able to start a family for a good portion of your youth. And that's just a reality that I think we're just not honest with women in particular. Men have a little bit more leeway when it comes to figuring out what they want to do with their lives. And they have a little bit more leeway. I mean, ideally, everybody gets married young and everybody sort of gets married and grows together. But realistically speaking, even if that's not the case for a man, he still has X amount of years to make money, form his career. And honestly, well into his 30s and maybe even 40s, he's just becoming of higher and higher value. For women, it's the opposite. You know, you have to focus on maintaining your femininity and maintaining your focusing on finding on certain skill sets that are going to make you more attractive to, and nobody wants to say it, but this is the reality, to a man who is working and will one day want to provide for you. And not in like a physical sense, make yourself attractive. I mean, just like in every aspect of the word, go to church, be, volunteer, do things that make you, an attractive biblical woman to a future husband. So it's just like, it's just a completely different set of rules that we don't ever really tell kids about. And I think when you're raised in the secular school system, I know I went to public school, nobody was pulling me aside and telling me that. No one, absolutely no one, not even really my parents. And it's a shame, because I think that's what's destroyed people. And that's how we wind up with a lot of women who say well into their 40s, I don't want to have kids. And then they're like kind of old at that point, to be quite honest. And all the men in their age group are either already married, or if they're not, they're looking for women who are 10, 20 years old, younger than them. So it's like, you're setting yourself up for disaster as a woman if you're not thinking ahead. And as a parent, you're setting your child up for failure if you're not being honest with them. And everything you just stated there, like, that's something I hope to implement in my children's lives. Like, if I have daughters specifically, I want to be able to be honest with them and say, look, this is what your life's going to look like. There was once a time I wanted to be a lawyer too. And like, thinking about that now, like, I think one of the reasons, it's funny enough, it's not even the fact that I want to get married and have children that turned me off to it. It's actually the education system, because I went to school for journalism. I graduated early. I graduated in about 3 years. So, and I had a job while I was in college already. So I was already hired, but I remember going to school and being like, what a waste of money. Like, I can't believe, I mean, that's another topic, but my point is like, it had it not been for that realization, I probably would have gone to school for another X amount of years to get either my graduate's degree or to go to school to be a lawyer. Because the main thought out there, if you grow up in a very secular world where you're going to public school, then you go to a liberal college like I did at American University in Washington, D.C., no one's there to tell you you're ruining your life by making these decisions that may hinder you from being able to have a family. That said, I don't want to be so like doom and gloom, like, obviously there's opportunities for you to, you know, make changes in your life that will enable you to have a family. Like, you know, if you're too old to be able to have kids, like, you could, there's always adoption, or there's so many great, you know, other like ways that you can like still make it work for your life. It's just that, you know, I think it doesn't help when we're setting people up for failure, specifically women up for failure. And I think that's really sad. And also this whole idea of like, get out there, girl, sleep with whatever that moves, like anything, like just be like a man, like sleep with everything. Like the whole sexual freedom movement, I think also destroyed women, because it ruined their purity, I think. And it's sad to see. And I'm not like the kind of person, I'm not like going to come out here and be like, you're a hoe, you're a hoe, you're a hoe, and you're a hoe. But like, come on, like, let's be real here. Like, we've created a monster with all of this, like, you know, everybody's the same. It doesn't matter. There are no differences in gender. Because the reality is that there are, and we're just doing people a disservice by not saying that. And we're doing men a disservice too, might I add, because even men, I think, have this internalized feminism that has caused them to choose the wrong women when it comes to getting married or even having long-term relationships.
Well, and I've talked to young men who you know, they want the stay-at-home life, but they basically feel like that's wrong that they want that, because that's what the world teaches. And to your point about not being like, you know, a doomer, if you have made decisions as a young single woman that, you know, you might do differently now, or maybe you love your career, but you still, you know, want a husband, like there's still hope for that, you know? And I personally am proof that you can do everything quote unquote right. And I say quote unquote because obviously this is going to vary from person to person. But what I mean by that is I got married young. I, you know, submitted to my husband. I was focused on homemaking and not school, even though I did, you know, go through my master's. That was because my husband wanted me to. And I wasn't able to have children myself. Like I, you know, we went through like a bunch of miscarriages and stuff. So you can do everything, you know, sort of the super traditional way and still end up in a situation that's perhaps not ideal. And you can do things in a super liberal way and still end up with, you know, 8 kids because life, you know, because that's what, you know, life took a turn. So there is always hope and there's always going to be, you know, pitfalls that come along. So none of this is meant to like shame anyone at all or, you know, make anyone feel bad about the decisions that they make. This is just an open and honest discussion about what young women who are maybe not super far along in their career yet or not, you know, they haven't kind of made those decisions yet. I think talking about, you know, what you do when those decisions have been made, that's sort of like a whole other conversation in a lot of ways. But, you know, simple things that I always tell women, you know, like there's very simple things that you can do to make sure that, you know, you are prepared when you get married. Things like stay sexually pure, stay off of birth control, even if even if the doctor gives it to you because it'll help your cramps or whatever, like it's just not good for you. It's not good for your body. I can make a moral argument for it, but the fact, you know, or against it, I mean, a moral argument against birth control, but the fact is it's just not good for your body, period. We know this, it's proven. If you ever read that like terribly long pamphlet that comes with your birth control pills, it will become pretty clear that like it's actually not good for your body. It's not good for you to stop your body's natural functions. And so that's, you know, another thing that I say that sometimes people get really like worked up about. And I say this as someone who had a good experience with birth control, which is another topic, you know, but it's just not prudent to do that. And the fact is, if you're not sexually active, you actually don't need it. So it's, you know, there's that. And so there is so much I think that young women can do. They, you know, focus on, you know, if you want to marry a Christian man, which I believe, you know, the Bible tells us we shouldn't be unequally yoked. If you are a Christian woman, you should only be dating Christian men. And that may mean that you date less because there's less of them. But we're looking at quality over quantity here. And we're also looking at walking in obedience to Christ and, you know, to God's word. And so that's an important thing. I've seen a lot of, you know, young women kind of get thrown off a little bit because they meet this guy and it's so great, but he's not a Christian and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you know, that's not what we need to be doing at all. You want a husband that, you know, preferably he's further along than you. So, you know, and can provide spiritual headship, but that's not always the case either, you know, but that's certainly not going to be the case if the man's not even a Christian.
Yeah, though that's absolutely true. It's so sad to me when I hear Christian girls come up to me and say like, oh, I met this guy. He's great, but he's an atheist but he's this, he's that. It's never going to work. It's just not. I mean, look, there you hear stories all the time about people who, you know, they became believers. They, and not to say that those things don't happen, but you know, 9 times out of 10, that's not going to be the case. like, let's just be realistic here. And I think it is so important, to your point, to be equally yoked with the man, at least equally yoked. Ideally, they are further along. I agree with that. But the one mistake I see them make is that, and the reason why they make that mistake is because they don't want to feel left out of the dating fun, so to speak. And it's not really fun, but I think that, like, because a lot of times the secular perspective on dating is, well, I'm just living in the moment. I'm just going to date all these guys that are around me. Like, they don't have to be the love of my life. It's just fun. It's just fun, right? But, you know, as Christians, we have to remember that, yes, we all are called to a life of obedience to the Bible, and we have to make sure that we're not just living in the moment. That's not what being Christian is about. It's about following the word of God. And you are going to date less frequently. I can tell you right now that it's hard, because it's like, it's very infrequent that I find a guy that I deem like respectable enough to date it from a Christian, not in like a, I think I'm better than everybody else way, but like a true Christian man. It's just very, very rare. And that's just statistically speaking true, especially in a city like DC. Like the realization you have to come to and accept as a Christian woman is you're probably not going to be dating around the same way that your secular friends will be. And if you can't accept that, then you're going to get very lost along in your journey, and you're just kind of buying into the secular world, and you're not staying true to the word of God. So be comfortable would be my advice to a lot of young women in a similar boat to me, where you're in your 20s and you're single. Like, be comfortable in your singleness and in your, I don't want to say alone, because you're never alone really, right? But use that time to read scripture, and use that time to really be a strong Christian and go through that journey and allow it to make you into a strong Christian, because that does take a lot of strength to look at the secular world go by and see your friends doing all of these crazy things, going out, meeting these guys, and you saying to yourself, no, like, I'm not going to partake in that. That's degeneracy. And on top of that, it's not biblical. But I'm telling you, you're going to end up better. Your heart's going to be broken less. You're going to be less jaded, okay, at the end of the day, because you're not going to have all these little relationships that didn't end up well. And also, God will bring you the right person at the right time. Like, it's in his timing. I know that's so cliche to say, but it is so true. Like, just that's what having faith is all about. You just have to have faith that God will bring you to that right person at the right time. You may not be ready for your husband in that time of singleness. That's why that time of singleness is so crucial. You know, he's sharpening you. He meaning God, of course, is getting you ready for that time. And you have to embrace that. Don't fight it. Embrace it. Because the more you fight it, the more likely it is that that journey is going to take a lot longer. And also more likely that you're going to end up falling for that secular lifestyle. So it is really important that you are confident with who you are, what you believe in. Be a strong Christian woman. And this is where strength is so important, because you cannot look at what everybody else is doing and say, oh, I want to do that too. Don't fall for it. Don't do it. You will be better off. I guarantee it. You will be better off. And that's just so important to remember, because you know what? Most of these men are not Christian, even the ones who say that they are. And like I said earlier, that's super important to be able to decipher. Again, read actions. Don't listen to words so much. That's why it's so important in that to just be comfortable being alone, if that makes sense.
I think you really hit the nail on the head. And that is, I think that's a great place for us to wrap up, because I think finding contentment in where you are is the key. And you will find that contentment in the Lord, in, you know, but it may take some work. But the fact is that we all have areas in our life that, you know, much of what we are, pretty much everything that we are called to be and do as Christians is not what comes natural. I think discontentedness is natural, that to always, you know, the covetousness of wanting what others have, like, those are natural inclinations of our sinful nature. This is why God, you know, said, don't be that way. That's why thou shalt not covet is a commandment. And when we are really keeping ourselves, you know, Christ focused, these things are easier. I'm not sure if this would be, all of this was certainly intended as a celebration of our single sisters. I don't know if it came off that way or not, but I do want you ladies who are listening, who are single, to know we see you, we love you. You are a vital part of the church, and God has so much in store for you. It's coming, you know, certainly I don't know when, but there's so much that you can do until it comes, you know, to prepare yourself. So thank you, Anna, so much for coming. I really appreciate it so much. We definitely have to do this again. This is like a great conversation. Go ahead and plug your show and everything. Like, tell everyone where they can find you.
Yeah, well, thank you. This was so much fun. I really enjoyed being on. This is not a topic I get to discuss very often, so really appreciated it. Everyone, you can check out my show on Rumble at LFA TV. That's the Rumble channel it's under, and it's the show called Wrong Think with Anna Perez, and it's at 3 p.m. Eastern time every day, Monday through Friday. So thank you so much, Hannah.
Thank you so much. And before we go, I will just remind our listeners that all of the thoughts and opinions expressed here belong to the person who spoke them, or in my case, her husband. But as with everything in patriarchy country, this episode has been husband approved. So you can direct any of your complaints or misgivings straight to the man himself. Tony is at What's Good It's T on Twitter, and he joined specifically for this reason. So if you have an issue with anything that was said today, feel free to write him and let him know, and he will promptly remind you that he listened to this episode before I put it out and runs his household as he sees fit. So thanks everybody for listening, and until next time. Hey, this one for the homemakers. Hey, this one for the homemakers. Dancing through a homemaker. Hey, hey, this one for the homemakers. 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 This one for the homemakers.